Hi, I'm Carmen LaBurge. Thanks for listening to the podcast of Mornings with Carmen LaBurge.
Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. And I won't worry about tomorrow. I'm trusting in what you say. Today is the day. Today is the day.
All right, today is the day the Lord has made, and as we rejoice and as we are glad in it, I'm wondering if there are some headlines out there that make you chuckle and roll your eyes and, well, just kind of say to yourself, what in the world? Okay, so here's a headline from yesterday. Cow cuddling. Cow cuddling. You're not mishearing me. Cow cuddling is a thing, and you can cuddle a cow for $75 an hour. That's right. Cow cuddling. Okay, so here's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking that everybody who's listening right now who's involved in 4-H or FFA, you've got some fairs coming up in your local community. You've got a field in front of your house. You're wondering, you know, how can I capitalize on like the need of people in the city to have some experiences like field trips? Here's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking of like actual field trips, trips to the field, not field trips where people go to like fancy science museums. I mean, those are important too. But a field trip where the people from the city actually come out to a field. Listen to this. People are paying $75 an hour, not necessarily even for the guaranteed cuddling of a cow, but for the opportunity to walk in a field where cows are. And should the cows so choose to engage in the cuddling, which we have cows, my cows would not be into this. So, but there's some of you out there who have bottle-fed calves. And those bottle-fed calves are more than happy to, you know, get a cuddle in every once in a while. So here you go. I'm serious here. I'm serious. There is an opportunity here for those of you who are listening who have been wondering, you know, how am I going to capitalize on what God has given me and the stewardship over these precious bovine who are in my family? We describe them as walking refrigerators. I won't hide the truth. But there's an opportunity here. So cow cuddling, you ought to Google it. If you are a teenager listening and you are saying to yourself, there's a summer job for me, I could make, people would pay. People are paying seven. This is apparently right now what the market will bear. It might not bear this much in your market, but this is what the market will bear right now, $75 an hour for the opportunity to cuddle a cow. That's what I got for you. So start some sort of field trip opportunity out there where you are today. We're going to have Adam Holtz up next from Plugged In. We're going to talk about what people are watching inside on big and little screens. That's up next. You're on Mornings with Carmen. Adam Holtz joining us via Skype from Plugged In. You can find him at PluggedIn.com. Adam, welcome back.
Good morning, and I think you missed an opportunity. I think it's capitalizing, not capitalizing. Just saying.
Yes, capitalizing.
And, you know, I know we've only got one segment, but I just want to say, having grown up near a farm, my dad's family raises cattle. It's difficult for me to wrap my brain around wanting to cover a snot and other thing covered cow that, frankly, they usually won't even get within 10 feet of you.
I know, not only
is the idea weird, but it's preying on city folks' stupidity of actually even understanding what a cow is.
Yes. Well, so then there's goat yoga, and that we will talk about on another segment.
Okay. Yes.
Anyway. Okay. Let's go to the Lion King, talking about cuddly creatures. The Lion King, I haven't seen it yet. So what am I missing?
Well, here's what it is. It is almost a beat-for-beat live-action remake, and live-action should be in quotes here. Obviously, it's not live-action in the way we usually use that phrase. It is a masterfully created CGI redo on the beloved 1994 animated cartoon. So it is animated, but it's animated in a totally different way. If you didn't know better, you would swear this was real. I mean, it looks like National Geographic. So Simba and Mufasa and Scar and Nala and all of our favorite characters from the original are back. Really, the only place that it deviates a little bit is that we have the two comic relief characters. we've got Pumbaa and Timon. They do voiced by Billy Eichner and Seth Rogen. They riff a little bit sort of in a free range kind of way. And we get a little bathroom humor. But that's about the only place you're going to find anything different. What I thought was really surprising about this, though, is that by upping the level of realism, what it did for me was it made this a much more intense movie. The violent fight scenes with Scar and the hyenas, you know, there's a main character that dies. I won't say anything more than that, other than if you're the one person on Earth who hasn't seen it, it might or might not be a lion. that was a heartrending scene in 1994. And this time around, it's so realistic. I'm like, oh man, I think some of these scenes could be pretty traumatizing to littles who are sensitive. I'm not sure I would take my 8-year-old to this. I think it would totally freak her out. And I don't think that's what Disney was going for, but I walked out saying that was amazing. It was beautiful. And it was a movie that I don't think is a great fit for really young kids, which is kind of sad.
Okay, and so if we go to PluggedIn.com right now, we are going to see what's new and streaming for families in July. Tell us a little bit, you know, just to reflect on what is streaming, and then maybe specifically the edits that are being made to 13 Reasons. Like, that's an interesting little segment here.
Well, you know, once upon a time, virtually everything was on Netflix, but with the new arrival of all of these other streaming networks, things come and go on Netflix fairly regularly. And same with Amazon Prime and Hulu and some of these other things. So let me just give you a rundown. And this is going to change come November when Disney Plus launches, which will be Disney's streaming service, and they're going to be pulling everything back. But for right now, on Netflix, you can get Mary Poppins Returns and The Princess and the Frog, so a couple of Disney movies. On Amazon Prime, Star Trek Nemesis has shown up from 2002, which maybe or maybe isn't something anybody is going to be interested in, but it's another kind of big brand name thing. The movie Astro Boy is on Hulu. So again, you've got to sort of pay attention to what's coming and what's going if there's something in particular that you are looking for. So let me now jump to your second question with 13 Reasons Why. Back when this debuted, the first season of this debuted, 13 Reasons Why is a 13-episode Netflix show about a young woman who commits suicide, and she leaves tapes, cassette tapes, in an old-school kind of way, to tell each of the people who influenced her to make that decision what their role in that process was. Now, when it was made, the producers said, man, we really want to help people deal with this issue of teen suicide because it's real. And there was a very graphic suicide scene. Well, since then, the National Institutes of Health has linked it to a spike in teen suicides from kids ages 10 to 17. And so at least with some kids, it's had exactly the opposite effect. It has actually been a suggestive kind of show, it would seem. And so they're about to release the third season of 13 Reasons Why. And each one is now focusing on different teen issues. Obviously, the main character in the first one committed suicide, so her story is at an end. But Netflix has come out and said, you know, you're right. We hear what you're saying. And they've cut that really graphic and controversial scene out of the first season. Although at this point, you know, you could argue that good for them, but a lot of the damage has already been done. It's a shame they couldn't have listened earlier.
Right. Something like 6.1 million young people have already seen the first season of it,
yeah.
You know, in
big
total
numbers.
All right. Yeah, big numbers. All right, Adam, you and I got to leave it right there. Thank you so much. I know today was super fast, but we look forward to talking with you about what our eyeballs are on and then what is happening in our hearts and minds, you know, when we allow those things in. So thank you so much for your good work at PluggedIn.com.
We'll talk to you next week, Carmen. Thank you.
All right, bye-bye. We'll be right back. July 1969, July 20th, specifically 1969, we are talking about the Apollo 11 space mission, and we are going to talk more broadly about the Apollo missions in general. Joining me to do that is Bill Federer. You know him from AmericanMinute.com. You also know him as a best-selling author and well-known speaker across the country at the integration of what I would describe as what it means to be both a Christian and an American. So, Bill, welcome to Mornings with Carmen.
Hey, great to be with you, Carmen.
Well, it's wonderful to have you here. I think that as folks are thinking about the Apollo 11 mission and in this most historic anniversary, there's a lot of folks, you know, talking about it from various angles. What we're trying to do is equip Christians to maybe walk out the faith component of that conversation this weekend.
Right. Well, a little background. You had Robert Goddard's Read Jules Verne, and when 1899, he's a teenager, he gets the idea of rockets. And so he develops rockets. He writes a paper on space flight, 1927, and the New York Times ridicules it, says rockets can't work in the vacuum of space. Finally, after Apollo 11, the New York Times had to print a retraction. Anyway, Robert Goddard was financed by Charles Lindbergh. And then his work gets international, and there's a guy in Germany named Vernon von Braun, and he starts the German Rocket Society, and he's a grad school student. So they correspond, and then 1939, World War II, and Goddard's realizing his correspondence with some of these Germans sounds a little too militaristic, and he cuts it off. He tells the Army and Navy that they better get involved in rockets. Army doesn't pay attention. Navy gives Robert Goddard a job, and he works for 3 years till he dies. Anyway, the war in Nazi Germany, the Nazis are losing. Russians and Americans are making a mad dash to capture these scientists. Operation Paperclip. Vernon von Braun says, we knew that we had developed a new form of weapon and that could impact the world. And we decided we wanted to surrender to the side that was guided by the Bible. And so he and all of his scientists come to America, and they're working on a space program. Well, 1957, Russians launch Sputnik, the first satellite, and the space race is on. So that's 57. A year or two later is when Vernon von Braun launches Explorer 1, our first satellite. Then 1961, Russians launch the first person into space, Yuri Gagarin, and he circles the Earth once. We launch Alan Shepard, 1961. He's in space 15 minutes, but yet we got somebody up there. And then John Glenn becomes the first American to orbit the Earth three times in about 4.5 hours and lands safely. Actually, the shield, heat shield came off and he almost disintegrated, but it was a miracle that he survived. Anyway, and now we have the Mercury program, the Gemini program, and the Apollo program. About 560 some odd people have gone 62 miles above the Earth's surface, so they categorize as astronauts. Only 24 have ever broken out of the Earth's orbit and gone toward the moon. And out of the 24, only 12 have walked on the moon. So the first American flight to break out of Earth's orbit is Apollo 8.
I want to talk about Apollo 8 briefly, because I think that one of the things that happens in the Apollo 8 experience is a reading. Can you tell us what was read?
Right. So here it's Christmas Eve, 1968. Frank Borman, Bill Anders, and Jim Lovell circle the moon, and they're looking back at the Earth. And they begin to read from the book of Genesis. We are now approaching lunar sunrise for all the people back on Earth. The crew of Apollo 8 has a message that we would like to send you. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. They read through the first 8 lines of the book of Genesis. And then they end by saying, and from the crew of Apollo 8, we close with good night, good luck, and Merry Christmas, and God bless all you on the good earth. And so that was heard by 100 million people. Very profound. This is the first time ever that they have circled the moon and they're saying this message back. And the science
it's
of
just
it was,
extraordinary.
And they really pulled together some a lot of miracles, because had they gotten the trajectory a little bit off, they would have ricocheted off the moon's gravitational pull and gone off into space. And had they gone a little bit too far, they would have been caught in the moon's gravitational pull and smashed into the moon. So they had to just get it just right. Anyway, Frank Borman later says, I had an enormous feeling that there had been a power greater than any of us, that there was a God, and that there was indeed a beginning. But then there's Apollo 11, and that's the first mission to land on the moon 50 years ago this coming week. And Richard Nixon says, Apollo 11 is on its way to the moon, carries three brave astronauts in the hopes and prayers of hundreds of millions of people. The moment when man first sets foot on a body other than the Earth will stand for centuries as supreme in human experience. I call upon all our people to join in prayer for the successful conclusion of Apollo 11. And anyway, so it's just amazing. Here they get to the moon and they undock from the Columbia, and it circles the moon about 37 times. Mike Collins is alone, and he goes on the dark side of the moon. He's outside of radio contact, and he gives a quote. He goes, not since Adam has there been a man more alone than me. He goes, on the other side of the moon is the rest of humanity, and on this side is me and God knows what else. So they land on the moon, and it's pretty interesting. We all know Neil Armstrong steps out and says, one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind. Well, before they got out of the moon, they had some quiet time, and because of the reading of the book of Genesis, Madeleine Murray O'Hare, an atheist, threatened to sue NASA. And so they say, look, from now on, you're going to do something spiritual. Turn the mic off. So Buzz Aldrin asks for radio silence. And what does he do? He celebrates communion on the moon. He's a Presbyterian. He went to the Webster Presbyterian Church in Houston, asked his pastor, Dean Woodruff, how to commemorate this event. He said communion, and the pastor Woodruff gives him a little silver goblet, and each astronaut was allowed to take some personal item with him, and he did. They have communion at the church, and then they tear off a piece of the bread, and he saves it in a little pouch, a little plastic pouch, and then he has a little plastic container with some grape juice. And so here he is on the moon with radio silence, and he pours the grape juice in 1/6 gravity. So it's coming out real slow, and it says he can see it circle in the bottom of the little goblet. And he reads John 15, I'm the vine and you are the branches. And then he receives communion. So it's just profound to think the first bread and wine, the first food consumed on the moon is communion. That forever will be the first thing ever eaten on the moon is communion.
It's just extraordinary. It's just extraordinary. Hey, Bill, you and I are going to have to leave it right there today, but we want to encourage everyone who's listening to pause. Take the cause to pause, because there are opportunities to bring your faith to bear, even in the conversation in the culture today, commemorating the 50th anniversary of the Apollo 11 flight. This is an opportunity to consider how your faith is borne out, not just here and now, but real faith by, you know, real men and women, the real God of all of the universe. Bill Federer, thank you so much for joining us today. You guys can check out what Bill's doing at AmericanMinute.com. So in a way of linking together my last conversation with Bill Federer and my next conversation with Chris Martin, I am reading from ARS Technica that has posted this week a survey done among kids in China and actually the UK and the United States. But I'm just going to juxtapose the answers from the kids in China to the answers from the kids in the United States. Given the choice of five professions, answer the question, what do you want to be when you grow up? Here are the five options: professional athlete, teacher, musician, astronaut, and a YouTuber or vlogger. That's a video blogger. In China, the number one answer, astronaut. That reaches back to our conversation about the 50th anniversary of the lunar landing and the Apollo 11 mission. And then reaching forward in the United States, the number one answer, kids in the United States, when asked the question, what do you want to be when you grow up? Given the options of teacher, professional athlete, musician, astronaut, and vlogger or YouTuber, guess which one they picked? Guess which one they picked? They want to be YouTubers. I'm talking next with Chris Martin from Lifeway Social.
Setting goals is an effective way to achieve desired results. So, Mom and Dad, what are your goals as a parent? Hi, I'm Mark Gregston with Parenting Today's Teens. In my opinion, parents these days spend too much time trying to make their kids happy and too little time helping them grow up. A parent's job isn't to be just liked or bribe their kids into loving them by providing stuff on demand. Mom and dad shouldn't let their teens do whatever they want or try to relate by overlooking bad behavior. Instead, parents should focus on helping their teen mature and leading them to embrace godly thinking and godly actions. So let me ask the question again. What are your goals as a parent? When you know your objective, you'll be much more likely to hit it.
Want more help from Mark Gregston? Find books and other resources online at parentingtodaysteens.org.
So I love to talk with Chris Martin from Lifeway Social Voices. You can find him on Twitter at ChrisMartin17. You can obviously find him at Lifeway. I love to talk with Chris because he helps me sort of understand and navigate the social media environment in which we now find ourselves. And so, Chris, welcome back.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So I keep a list of things that I want to talk with you about. I would love to sort of reach back and visit the President's Social Media Summit. I would love to reach back to this weekend and say, what happened on Twitter? But instead, let's do what we have agreed to talk about, which is, so this week, one of the things that happened was people started using, well, maybe they've been using it and I was unaware, something called FaceApp. And then all these warnings came out that FaceApp is actually the Russians just trying to get all of our pictures and names and the permission to use them forever and ever. So tell us what FaceApp is, why we should not be using it, maybe what to do if we have used it. And then sort of all of these free apps that we tend to use without thinking about the consequences.
Yeah, this is such an interesting phenomenon to me. So I'm actually now the host of a social media podcast called Social Cues. We're releasing it every Thursday or Friday. And unfortunately, we recorded our episode this week on Tuesday, like a day before FaceApp started blowing up. And I'm like, oh, we just missed it. We could have talked about FaceApp because it's such a great conversation. So I'm glad I get to talk about it with you. FaceApp is an app that actually popped kind of virally a couple years ago because there are a number of different face manipulations or transformations you can do in the app. And one of them is like a younger one that makes your face look like a baby face or something like that. And it's pretty creepy. But that popped back in like 2017. So the app is not new. It's not new to the scene or anything like that. But when it popped again this week, it was because a few celebrities maybe were paid to do it. I haven't seen if they were officially paid to do it or not, but a few celebrities started tweeting out or posting on Instagram pictures of themselves older as if they had used the app. And so when you have a bunch of really famous people like Gordon Ramsay or the Jonas Brothers posting that they're using this app to kind of transform their face, that's influencer marketing 101. You get all kinds of regular old people like you and me using the app. I, however, did not use the app because I was kind of aware of the security issues going along with it. So in short, what everyone's concerned about with FaceApp, you take a picture or you have a picture of yourself, doesn't have to be one you've newly taken. You upload it to the app and then it transforms your face to look like what you're going to look like when you're older, or you could do it when you're younger. And there's obviously security concerns there if you just sit and think about it for a second, because you're uploading a photo of yourself, presumably with your name. I did not go through the process, but I think you put in your information or log in some respect. And now some company has a picture of you associated with your name. So it added to this, the second layer to this that makes people very concerned, is the app was founded by a couple of Russian developers based out of St. Petersburg. So there's a lot of noise
around Florida. Not Florida. Yes. St. Petersburg, yeah, so, not Florida.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Same. Yeah. Russia. So a couple of a number of people were tweeting about their concerns about this, talking about, hey, you know, you're basically sending your photos to Russians to use against you or whatever. And yeah, at first that was my response. I didn't download the app. I didn't use it because I was kind of aware that when you're using a free app or service of any kind, you are the product. And so I didn't use it, but I saw the hubbub. And I think there is obviously security concerns. The terms of service and the privacy policy are kind of whack. They kind of say they can use your photos however they want. So, you know, maybe be prepared for them to maybe sell your photos and use them in some sort of stock photo advertising in the future or something like that. I don't know. But they say they can basically use your photos however they want. However, I want to push back against the concern. Because I think everyone's concerned because Russia. Like, oh no, these people are based out of Russia. Well, the photos were going to an Amazon server, which Amazon has all kinds of – Amazon hosts Netflix on their servers, okay? So it's not like Amazon owns them. But they're going to an Amazon-based server in the United States. So it's not like the images are going to Russia. Now, obviously, they can be accessed in Russia because the company is based there. But it's not like your photos are being sent to Vladimir Putin's server room or something like that. So there's not as much of a concern. That's where it's maybe a little bit overblown. Secondly, I think this needs to call into question whether or not we understand what we're doing when we log on to Facebook. Facebook is a company that has leaked millions of users' personal information to a number of organizations and has, wow, crazy, had issues with Russia. So I think when we think of face app and say, oh, man, these Russians are taking all of our pictures of our faces, I think maybe we need to step back and examine our relationships with every social media platform we have and understand that when you upload all those pictures of your newborn baby to Facebook and then Facebook says, oopsie, this one accidental security flaw allowed a third-party app to access all of your information, then – it is basically the same thing. The fact that we trust Silicon Valley-based companies like Facebook more than Russian-based companies is a little bit humorous to me when we've seen that companies like Facebook, despite attempts at regulation or billion-dollar fines by the U.S. government, their stock has only gone up since every single one of their scandals has happened. And so I think the idea that we should somehow trust Face App less because the founders founded the app in Russia – rather than Facebook because it was founded by a disgruntled Harvard student in his dorm room in Massachusetts, is a little bit ridiculous to me. We should not trust Facebook any more than we trust Face App.
Hmm. Okay, so that's a good like warning message today from Chris Martin at Lifeway Social. When Chris and I come back, we're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, Chris, let's talk about – want to go in the direction of teens, social media, and depression? Want to have that conversation?
Sure.
Okay. So when we come back, Chris and I are going to talk about how our teenagers are engaging on social media and the effect that it's having on their mental health, particularly in the direction of depression. So if you've got a teenager in the house, you have a relationship with a teenager, you've got teenagers in your church, obviously there are teenagers in the world. These are people about whom we are all concerned. They spend a lot of time with their faces on screens. They spend a lot of time on social media apps. Let's talk about what they're doing there and the effect that it's having on them. That's up next here on Mornings with Carmen. Chris Martin from Lifeway Social. Hey, are we supposed to be calling it Lifeway Social, Lifeway Voices? What's the lingo I'm supposed to be using? I want to be accurate.
It's kind of funny. You guys, it's hard to keep up with all the changes that have happened in my life the last couple of years. So I don't – Lifeway Social no longer exists technically. So I run a site called Lifeway Voices, which is a blog for Lifeway authors and speakers to contribute. So I run Lifeway's social media. And I also run Lifeway Voices, which is a blog for Lifeway authors.
Okay. So, I don't have any idea how to introduce you anymore. So I'm just going to say,
I'll send you a new bio. It's fine.
People can find you on Twitter. This is my best place to interact with you is Chris Martin 17. So if you want to find Chris, you want to interact with him, you want to see what he's doing, go to Twitter and go to @ChrisMartin17. Now, that's an invitation for people to go to Twitter, which, you know, probably should not be an ad for Twitter. You're joining us via Skype, which is another free resource that we all use that technology now provides. So I'm obviously not afraid to be engaged on social media, but there are some warnings that we should you know, we should keep in mind, particularly when we're talking about teenagers. So just walk us into the sort of intersection of teens and social media and then what we know about depression.
Sure. So I work in student ministry at my local church. So I work at Lifeway full time and then sort of for free, I'm on staff at my church as a sort of, I hesitate to call it a hobby because I'm on staff, but I lead the student ministry at our local church. So I just got back from a retreat this past weekend with 16 middle and high schoolers, which was a blast, believe it or not. I mean, I was exhausted until about yesterday, but it was fun. And so I'm interacting with teenagers and talking to them about these issues a lot. And it's really fun for me to hear from them because, you know, so I'm a digital native in the very technical sense of the word, according to the article written in 2000 by Mark Prinsky on who are digital natives. I grew up with social media and really just the internet in my home from a young age. So I'm more similar to the kids that are 10 and 15 years younger than me than I was to the people 10 and 15 years older than me. And these students are interacting on social media with their friends almost 24/7 at any time throughout the day. It's keeping them up at night. As I said, I believe I wrote in my book on millennials, though it's more relevant for iGen or Gen Zers, today's teenagers are always in the hallway. So if you think about the high school experience, the most volatile and frequent social interactions take place in the hallway. And when you used to be in high school and you would walk around in the hallways at school, whether it was a positive or negative experience for you, pre-social media age, when you got home, you weren't having to socialize anymore. You know, you hang out with friends in the neighborhood or go to a football game on Friday night or something like that. But you don't have to, when you get home, you are free from the social pressures of the high school hallway. And there's a certain amount of health to that, right? You shouldn't be in the pressure, the social pressure cooker that is the high school hallway 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That would understandably maybe cause a little bit of stress and social anxiety. But unfortunately, Carmen, that's happening today. That teens today are always in the hallway. The social pressures of the high school hallway, the middle school hallway never turn off. There's always a new Instagram story to watch. There's always a new Snapchat streak to continue. There's always a new TikTok trend, which that may not even mean anything to you, but there's always a new TikTok trend to learn about and create content around. And there's always something to keep up with, and teenagers are always in the hallway. And as you would imagine, that's having an impact on mental health. So there's a great sociologist named Jonathan Haidt from NYU. He's at NYU right now. He's been a number of places, so I forget. He was at Virginia before. Now he's at NYU. Has done a ton of study on millennials and Gen Zers in particular, even more recently, and how being a social psychologist on how social media is affecting them. So there's some data he shared on the Joe Rogan podcast a number of months ago. You can find it on YouTube. Joe Rogan is a prolific podcaster, and I only recommend him for certain episodes. He's pretty crass, uses some language. So this is not a blanket endorsement of him. But when Jonathan Haidt was on his podcast, they had an incredibly insightful discussion about how social media is affecting young people, particularly because Joe Rogan has a teenage daughter himself, I believe. And so this graph that I wish I could show you, but I'll just describe, was shocking and heartbreaking to me. So of persons aged 12 to 17, girls and boys who had at least one major depressive episode in the last year. Here's how it's gone up since 2005. So in 2005, about 4%, 5% of boys had a major depressive episode in the last year. That's basically teenagers, 13 to 17, 12 to 17. And in 2017, it was only about 6%. So it went from 5 to 6% in about 11 years, 12 years. Girls in 2005, girls ages 12 to 17, about 12% of girls had a major depressive episode. And in 2007, so that's in 2005, about 12. In 2017, about 20% of girls had a major depressive episode in the last year. So over the course of 11 or 12 years, boys increased by about 1% and girls increased by about 8%. And so why is that? Why? And they don't, you know, in this study, in a number of studies, it's hard to pinpoint social media as the reason depression and anxiety is increasing among teenagers. But that's the only major sociological development that's happened in the last 12 years that would contribute to that. Now, why girls more than boys? The reason is just think about how girls and boys interact and socialize. Boys, the way they express conflict and interact with one another tends to be more physical, especially at this age, 12 to 17. The way they work out conflict tends to be more physical. You have boys fighting, you know, more boys get in fights. I'm pretty sure statistically, I know at least anecdotally, I know this is true, but I'm pretty sure statistically, more boys get in fights than girls, physical fist fights. So that's how they tend to work out their conflict or work out their anger, their stress with one another. However, girls express their conflict, work through their conflict, their stress and anger with one another through sort of social sabotage, I believe is how Jonathan Haidt puts it, through backstabbing one another, more gossiping about one another, more undermining social status among other girls or just other people in social circles. Which one of those lends itself more to the social media phenomenon?
Yeah,
obviously
the second.
The girls.
Mean girls.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. So how girls express and work through conflict is much more promoted, I guess you could say, is much more encouraged through the new means of socializing through social media than boys. So there's a lot more opportunity for girls in particular over boys to be depressed and anxious because the sort of social performance that they're having to go through in the high school hallway every day in the early in the 90s, 2000s, and before that used to stop when they got home or maybe continue on the weekends now never stops. And so that produces an incredible amount of social anxiety, which then leads to depression, feelings of not being accepted, et cetera. So it's an epidemic, really.
All right. For folks who want to read some original investigative research about this, you can actually go to the Journal of American Medicine Network. So that's JAMANetwork.com. If you go to the pediatrics page, actually on July the 15th, they posted a brand new study on the association of screen time and depression in adolescents. And it absolutely confirms, verifies, and I think highlights what Chris Martin and I are talking about today. So again, that's JAMANetwork.com, the pediatrics page. Chris, thank you so much. And I'll find a better way to introduce you next time. But folks can find you on Twitter at ChrisMartin17. I love talking with you. And congratulations on the No Social Cues podcast.
Yeah, thanks. Have a great weekend.
You too. We'll be right back. Okay, so for those of you who are sort of students of history, you certainly know that we're celebrating the 50th anniversary of the Apollo landing on the moon. And really, all of media is probably going to be consumed with that story as it was 50 years ago, which may be why few people remember that it was 50 years ago today that Senator Edward Kennedy left a party in Chappaquiddick Island near Martha's Vineyard with a young woman who was 28 years old named Mary Jo Kopechne. His car went off the bridge into the water. He survived. She did not. That happened 50 years ago today. I want you to be thinking today about people who experience really significant loss, and their stories either go unreported or, you know, the media is focused on something else. So as you are dealing with whatever you're dealing with today, as you are dealing with the challenges and the griefs of life, just know that God sees. God sees. It doesn't matter if what you are dealing with ever makes the headline news. God sees. God knows where you are. He knows who you are. He knows what you're dealing with. And he is with you. God is with you. And so I just want that to be something that we all keep in mind and in heart this weekend, certainly as we look to the moon and imagine the stars. All right, friends, glorify God in your life always and in all ways this weekend. Spend a little time stargazing and dreaming big dreams. Have a great weekend. Thanks for listening to this podcast of Mornings with Carmen LaBurge from Faith Radio. If you haven't, you can subscribe to automatically receive the podcast through iTunes or the Google Play Music app. That way, you never miss an episode. It's also available anytime at myfaithradio.com.